From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The popularity of politicians like Senator Bernie Sanders and soon-to-be Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has underscored the openness of Americans to the S word. Socialism is no longer a dirty word in the United States, and more Americans, especially young people who are burdened with debt and struggling in this economy, are eager for a nation that tends more socialist. Now a new documentary profiles the presidential candidate who more than a century ago inspired masses of Americans to consider socialism as a preferable alternative. Eugene Victor Debs was a democratic socialist and a trade unionist. He helped to found the Industrial Workers of the World, as well as the American Socialist Party, and he ran for president 5 times, starting in 1900, and was arrested for his anti-war views. Many, including Senator Sanders, credit Debs for inspiring them today. My guest is Yael Strom, a violinist, composer, filmmaker, writer, photographer, and playwright, and his new documentary is called American Socialist, The Life and Times of Eugene Victor Debs. Welcome to the program, Yael.
Thank you very much for having me, Sonali.
What inspired you to make this documentary that seems so well-timed for these days that we live in?
Well, it really kind of goes back to 2008, or really 2007, when I was, along with my wife, Elizabeth Schwartz, the executive producer of the film, when we were watching then-Senator Obama run against then-Senator McCain. And at some of the rallies that Senator Obama was having, the opposition would be holding up signs, you know, go home red, or you're a socialist, or we're anti-socialism. And then again, back in 2011, when he ran for his second term, then President Obama, and I finally looked at the television night and I said to myself, President Obama is the farthest politician from being a socialist. And I think Americans need to really know what American style socialism is about and who were the real socialists. And you know, as you just said in your intro, take back the word socialism. It should not be a bad negative word.
It is kind of a pity that probably most Americans have never heard of Eugene Victor Debs until you sort of start reading the works of, say, Howard Zinn, who writes about him quite a bit. But Debs, at the time that he was running for president, wasn't he also really quite significantly popular?
Very much so, not just in the United States, but literally internationally. When he ran unsuccessfully, though it was a close race, for the House of Representatives in 1916 for the state of Indiana, he was getting contributions and letters of accolades from, you know, New Zealand, Australia, Japan, different parts of Europe. And so he was well respected by leaders across the world, and of course by the working class men and women in the United States. He was a household name. And you said it accurately. It's a shame that here's a man who really has shaped some of our policies in terms of labor, in terms of unionism, political struggle among workers and under the underclass. And today, most people, the majority of Americans have never heard of this person, unless you, like you said, you read Howard Zinn or you happen to have a particular interest in American progressive history. But he was not an unknown. People whose first language was not English knew him. So yes, he was a hero to tens of thousands of people, if not millions.
Let's go further back and start where your documentary starts, which is, who was Eugene Victor Debs? In fact, even his namesakes tell the tale of his influences, the kind of family he grew up. Give us a picture of his early life and what led him to identify himself as a socialist.
Well, he was born in 1855, so the Civil War had not started. His parents were first gen, were immigrants. They came from the Alsace-Lorraine region of France. His father was sort of middle class, but his mother was not. She was a seamstress. They came here. They first went to Cincinnati, eventually ended up in Terre Haute, Indiana, and had a little store. They were not wealthy, but they were of average means. But, you know, there were some good times and there were some bad times. In the home, literature was abound. As Deb says, and we see in the movie, the bedtime story for Debs and his siblings was his father and or mother reading Les Miserables by Victor Hugo in French. So he could speak and read and write French because his parents, that was their first language before English. There were people that would come to speak in the town, suffragettes, abolitionists, people that come by the house. So the home was imbued with a social consciousness. He goes to work at 14. He leaves school to help the family because, as you know, they weren't doing real well, and realizes quickly that, you know, that being a worker there, you know, it's something to be proud of, but very difficult. And he saw how the bosses, you know, the owners who would say, do this, do that, whatever. And we're taking home a pretty profit, but the workers were, you know, barely able to pay for their rent and food. And he writes home to his siblings. He's lonely. And that shapes him already at 14. And then eventually he comes home, becomes a city clerk. He runs for a local office. And he slowly starts doing more reading. But he was a Democrat, but he was not a socialist. He was, in fact, one of our talking heads, one of our professors who knows a lot about American labor history, Dr. Schneierow. He was not at all. He supported the owners of the unions. Excuse me, the owners of the railroads. So it took a while for him to slowly put these things together, the connection of worker, profit, owner, equity, fairness, being what is unfair. And it really culminates when he decides to create with some fellow other workers the American Railroad Union, the ARU, the first strong union for American railroad workers, and it slowly grows. And
so he was really instrumental in the strengthening of unionism at the early part of the century, the 20th
very
century.
Very much so. And of course there were strikes. There had been a strike in the 1870s, and the railroad workers lost it, but then there was another one that they won. But really culminating in the Pullman strike of 1894, Pullman, an extremely wealthy railroad owner and owner of making of the Pullman cars, and having control over many thousands of workers and hundreds, if not into the thousands of miles of railroad track. And the workers were getting squeezed. So there was a wildcat strike. Workers decided to say enough is enough. And Debs at that time was not really in favor of the strike. He realized it was going to be a very tough one to win, and can we wait it out? Can, you know, do we have the strength and numbers? But members of his own union went out and strike, and he, being the leader, organizer, founder of the ARU, said, "How can I not support my workers who put their trust in me, who have paid their dues to the union?" And so he says, "Okay, I will back the strike." And it was a big strike. It crossed many states. Grover Cleveland, though, said that if any railroad cars are stopped that are carrying mail across state lines, that will be a federal law broken. And, of course, that happened. There were fights. There were railroad cars burned. There was violence on both sides, the federal troops as well as the workers. The workers got the short end of it. Many were wounded, many killed. They lose the strike, and Debs, along with a few other of the leaders of the ARU, are brought to court, tried, and put into prison. And it is this particular point in his time that in his mind starts churning new ideas, new thoughts, because he has brought literature, particularly by Victor Berger, who was already a socialist. He was a German Jew from the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, and of course, socialism had already been growing since the late 1840s in Europe, Western Europe. And he starts reading Marx, Engels, and other progressive writers. And this is when we clearly see Eugene Victor Debs starting to, his political philosophy really make some major changes and go into the direction of socialism as we know it today.
I want to play for our audience the trailer of the documentary we're discussing, made by my guest Yael Strom. The name of the film is American Socialist, The Life and Times of Eugene Victor Debs.
While there is a lower class, I am in it. While there is a criminal element, I am of it. While there is a soul in prison, I am not free.
In the first part of the 20th century, American workers were overlooked or worse, persecuted by their powerful business owners. No one seemed to be listening to them or protecting them. But Eugene Victor Debs was a man whose beliefs had been shaped by his faith and his determination that all Americans deserve to work hard in a fair world.
Cain was the author of the competitive theory, while the cross of Jesus stands as its eternal denial.
I was brought up with stories of Debs, his martyrdom. Particularly admirable was that he had gone to prison for opposing the First World War.
We developed in the 1970s the computer industry, which wiped out huge numbers of jobs, you know, because the computer does that. We also had corporations who wanted to make more money and found workers much cheaper in other parts of the world because they haven't had rising wages like we had here, and capitalists reward rising wages by leaving.
This film is about a man who worked tirelessly for his fellow Americans and how aspects of his story and his struggle can be seen and felt throughout our country today.
You've been watching a trailer of the documentary American Socialist, The Life and Times of Eugene Victor Debs. In our program later, we'll tell you exactly how you can watch the film. Filmmaker Yael Strom joins me. Yael, in this trailer, we just heard reference to the fact that he was also, Eugene Debs was also jailed for his opposition to World War I. Tell us that story and how his socialist views were consistent with an opposition to war.
Well, so the war begins, and United States, of course, does not go to war in the very beginning in 1914. But what happens is the socialists among themselves are starting to debate, because there's Germany, there's Russia, the two sides, and then those people who join Germany and those who join Russia. And there were socialist parties, socialist members in both countries. So who do you support? And this feeling of nationalism, because then after World War I, we know that there's no more Austrian-Hungarian Empire, there's no more Tsarist Empire, there becomes the Soviet Union, and then these new European countries, etc. And so, but Debs saw it clearly as, who is profiting from war? Why are we having war? People who own, who make armaments profit, food staples profit, vehicles profit, etc. And so what is this war really about? Is it about borders? Is it about a political issue? And Debs felt that these working men and women are thrown into the situation, didn't get to vote on it, didn't get to discuss it, but are just told, oh, this is your enemy. Now, because the Archduke, he was assassinated, we have to go attack the Russians, or the Russians have to attack the Germans. et cetera. The French have to get into it now, the English, and saw through the ages that war never benefits the working man. In fact, what did they say? You know, it's poor men fight and die in wars, and rich men order the men to battle and profit from the wars. And so, to his credit, because there were socialists in the United States who did not agree with Debs. In fact, there was a split in part of the party. There was argument. There was tension in the convention of 1916, though Debs was not running for president then. And so Debs decided, no, even though some of my colleagues who I respect are saying this is time because this will help bring the revolution, or we have to support the nationalist side of socialism, you know, the Germans or the Russians, depending on what side they were from, supporting. And he says, no, the working man always gets the losing end of the stick in any kind of world conflict, right, and this being this war. And so he said, no, I'm not. And he starts speaking out against it. And then and Woodrow Wilson, President Woodrow Wilson, who we often like to claim is one of these great presidents in the United States, and you know, brought us out of World War I in victory, and you know, was going to create this not the United Nations. What was he going to call it? The
League of Nations, or
yeah, thank you, the League of Nations, et cetera, et cetera. Well, he says that anyone who goes out in public and tells the working men and women not to support the war, and for the men who get drafted to burn their draft card or not to go show up to the particular military base or selective service where they've been asked to go for their physical, is going against the United States, is hurting the United States, basically being a traitor. Basically, it's sedition. You cannot proclaim that this is a terrible war and encourage American workers, encourage the American populace to be against this war.
So he was essentially, I understand, tried and convicted successfully under the Sedition Act, right?
It was just this past June 16th, 1918, he made his very famous Canton, Ohio speech. He had not been in the public for a while. One, physically, he was having some physical ailments. Also mentally, he was, you know, tired, what do I do, psychologically. But finally, workers told him, you have to say something, Eugene. People listen to you. And he did. And he says, I know, you know, basically, I know this. There are people in the audience who are writing this down, and this may get me in trouble, but I have to say what I think. And you're right. He was tried and convicted and sentenced to 10 years for speaking against the war that we know today, all these years later, 100 years later, was not a war that the United States needed to send its men and women to fight.
Yeah, let's talk about finally one of the most important aspects of Eugene Debs, which was the times that he ran for president. He ran 5 times for president with the American Socialist Party, which he helped to found. Give us a sense of what these campaigns were like, the kinds of discussions that took place in American living rooms, because there was a socialist running for president in a similar way to the kinds of discussions that Senator Bernie Sanders helped to foment when he ran in the Democratic primary in 2016. And Eugene Victor Debs ran 5 times for president, which requires a tremendous amount of energy.
Well, that's it. It takes a lot of, first of all, physical and mental energy. Also, what I should point out is what it shows you, something that's wrong in our American politic today is, you know, we're already talking, here's 2018, we're already talking about 2020. We know that the president, I like to call him Czar Trump, it's already talking about, you know, raising money. And here we are, the first half of 2018.
I think he was at fundraising rallies within a day or two of his inauguration.
Unbelievably so, and very sorry to say, in my humble opinion. Where Debs would run, it would be only for 6 months, 6-7 months. You give credit to them, the Democrats, Republicans, Socialists, whatever party, they were running for 24 months. It was 6-7 months. But anyhow, to get to the gist of your question, he would go and he would support strikers. He would go to these, what we call these socialist encampments. People don't realize that there were these encampments. They were almost like a religious a camp, in the sense that people, that the farmers and crop workers and fruit pickers, people that working in rural America, in the Southwest, Oklahoma, Texas, New Mexico, Kansas, Nebraska, Arkansas, etc., they would set up these social encampments so that the end of the season, in late August, they would have these like revival meetings, but instead of talking only about Jesus, they were talking about socialism. So Eugene Debs and other speakers, Helen Keller, for example, and others would come and speak. There'd be music, there'd be classes for kids, there'd be, of course, swimming and hiking. And we're talking about many tens of thousands of these encampments in places today we often think are quite very, you know, red in terms of the politics, in terms of those who supported Trump. And so Debs knew you have to go to people's homes, and you have to speak their language. And part of the language he was speaking was Christianity. He was talking to evangelical Christians and saying, this is what Jesus, you know, basically, you know, if you're a true Christian, Christianity is a form of socialism where there has to be equity for everybody, not the only the priests who have it all and say, give out a few crumbs to the rest of the people, you know, taking and, you know.
And so interesting, so different from evangelical Christianity today that preaches on the so-called gospel of prosperity, quite the opposite of Christianity being in line with socialism.
Very much so. And also sincerity. He talked of things that they could understand. He didn't put it into real technical, economic, Marxian, Marxist, theoretical terms. That was over their heads. They weren't interested in hearing that. He knew they weren't. He talked bread and butter issues. He talked their language. He never talked down to them. He talked to them. And as we know, in 1920, when he was in prison, he got 1 million votes that were counted. Some say, you know, some weren't counted, some were thrown out. 6% of the vote in the United States. It's amazing. And he didn't get elected, as we know, but there were mayors, city council people, and some House of Representatives people that did get swept into office as socialists. And so that today here we have in the 2018, we're excited about these people who ran under the banner of the DSA, Democratic Socialists of America, but they're not the first. People say, oh my God, this is the first time it ever happened. No. Know your history. It happened over 100 years ago. And so they set the table, these men and women who were running for office 100 years ago, for us today to see that young people from ages, whatever, 16 to 30, are saying, you know, the word socialism, I don't agree with it, of it being thought of as something negative and terrible, a boogeyman or something. It's just another way to look at how to run a more fair, equitable society. And I'm going to listen to some of these candidates. I may end up disagreeing with them, but I'm going to listen to them. I'm not just going to shut them down as we would have done 20, 30 years ago.
And so, Yale, where can people get a hold of this history through your documentary? The film is called American Socialist. I understand that it's available on demand as well as in DVD format.
Yes. So our distributor is First Run Features. It's just all together, you know, www.firstrunfeatures.com. And then they can go to American Socialist once they get to the main website. It's available on iTunes on demand. And also, if the people still want to have a good old hard copy DVD, and those who are in educational institutions, universities, high schools, they can go to canopy.com, Canopy with a K, K-A-N-O-P-Y. They're the largest distributor for all the educational institutions across the United States and Canada, and they're also distributing American Socialists. So all three ways they can bring it to themselves and bring it to a local union, we're hoping, a local DSA chapter or a school or a history class, because we're saying this is a must-see film before the November 2018 elections.
Well, Yale, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck to you with the film.
Well, Sonali, it was my pleasure, and thank you, and to your constituency. Thank you so much.
My guest is Yale Strom, a violinist, composer, filmmaker, writer, and photographer, as well as playwright. We've been discussing his new documentary, American Socialist, The Life and Times of Eugene Victor Debs. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.